Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Sean from Delco, PA.
What's up, everybody? I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic.
What's up, Sean?
Okay, here we go. The lights messed me. I have sobriety date September 20th, 2015. Not my first. I haven't had a drink or any other substance for that matter since that day. And I think about that day and like how when I woke up, when I woke up, the first thing on my mind wasn't like, this is it. This is the day I'm going to be sober forever. Like, I certainly did not pick that day to get sober. That was a terrible day. I was back in another recovery house, and people were telling me I was lucky to be back in that recovery house. I didn't feel so lucky. Living on another top bunk, living out of trash bags. I had a family that didn't want to see me, didn't really have any friends. Hadn't sniffed a woman in years other than the girl I left rehab with. No life skills, nothing, no bank account. I didn't see a whole lot of reasons to be happy to be alive. And again, that's people to me, you should be happy you're alive, kid. And I'm like, that's the worst thing I got going for me. That I'm still here, I'm still breathing, and I gotta do this again. I didn't have any money, but that never really stopped me before, you know? At this point, I can clearly see that a power much, much, much greater than me, stepped in that day and kept me away. Backing up a little bit, cause that's my job here, the whole what it's like, what happened, what it's like now. What it was like, is it was great. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I grew up in a place with people. That's not really important. None of how I grew up is what makes me an alcoholic. I am who I am. My parents did great. I would have told you they were Hitler before I got here, but they're not. they're fine, you know. For whatever reason, the first time, let me try to read this. The first time I took a drink, it was just the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I didn't have a rough life up to that point. But it took away every problem I never knew I even had. Hear people describe it as that going under an overpass in the rain, and that second where everything just kind of stops and I can just relax a little bit. Me and my buddy down the street, we polished off a case of Miller Lite ponies that we found in his dad's garage, and we ran around the street playing Ding Dong Ditch and not a care in the world. I had the time of my life, you know. Something happened inside me that day where it was like, this needs to happen as much as humanly possible for the rest of my life. I was 11 or something. I did not become a daily drinker in fifth grade. That was a little tough to pull off. But slowly but surely, the years following that, everything in my life got pushed to the side. I'm sure I'm not the only one in the room that can relate to that. I always played sports growing up, and that wasn't that important anymore. Family wasn't important anymore. Friends that didn't want to drink weren't important anymore. The friends that did want to drink became the people I treated best in life. The people that did what I wanted to do, I need you. I treated them like family. We're like-minded people. That obsession took over, pretty much immediately. And a lot of various other substances came in the mix, and I'm a garbage can as long as there's more, just I'll do it. You know, I don't care really what it is. And everything, I never put anything in my system I didn't like. And it was all good stuff. And again, sports were probably the only thing that got me through, like, high school. I knew my grades had to be, like, just good enough to play. So that somewhat kept me on the straight and narrow, but, like, every single solitary second I got outside of sports, outside of, like, practice or doing the bare minimum to, like, graduate high school was dedicated to getting loaded. And, that's what I did. I did it well. And I had a great time. I'm not going to stand up here and say, I hate alcohol. I love it. I love it so much I ended up here. If I hated it, I wouldn't be here. I had some great times. I barely squeaked by in high school. Even right away, I started hurting people. I just remember having this feeling, I could feel it when I walked into a room, the energy would just get sucked out of the room. My brother would have friends over or something, they'd be talking, and I come in and they get quiet, and people start clutching their purses and making sure their wallet's on them. Cause I'm also, I forgot to mention, I'm extremely tough. I'm so tough that I steal from my own blood because they're low hanging fruit and the guards are down. They're probably not going to call the cops. So let's do that. You know, who wants to get arrested? I'll just steal my mother's hard earned money. I'll steal her jewelry. Cause that's the thing. The rest of my siblings got the message loud and clear that you work for, anything you want, you got to work for. You want money? Get a job, things like that. Pretty simple message. And my work consisted of stealing their shit. Purse, whatever. All right. But that was like my job, was taking your stuff. I become so delusional. I look at it as like a gift I have to be able to sneak through the house. Like my parents sold their house, but every time I went back, even years sober, I would go back and walking upstairs, I knew which spots in the hallways made creaks and which ones didn't. And I was so programmed to walk in those certain steps and so I could move around the house without anybody hearing me. Even when I had not, I was dead sober and I was still walking in those exact steps. I became this absolutely insane person. My friends, it wasn't all of my problems came from alcohol, right? It's this super extreme inherent selfishness that I'd had for as long as I can remember. That what I want trumps what's right every single time. I don't care. I might feel bad after the fact, but not enough in the moment to stop what I'm doing if it's what I want to do, if it's what I think I need to do. I don't care who gets hurt. There was nothing I could do about it. And then what I do is I do all these things, I hurt all these people, and then nobody wants to see me or hang out with me, and I use that as self-pity. And self-pity is probably the strongest drug I ever did. I can sit in that shit for months, just beating myself up, not changing a goddamn thing, just piling it on. Just very moody, Yeah, that started to happen early on, and then, like I said, I squeaked out of high school somehow. Made my way up to a college, and I'm from Delaware County, we kind of consider this bumfuck PA, but even further out, bumfuck PA. And I went out there because, I got into the school closer to home too, but I went out there because I was on my own, and like I said, my mom and dad were Hitler and Eva Braun, so they were the problem. So I just got to get away from them. and then I'll be fine. And I got away from them, and I wasn't fine. And again, like, all over again, like, I guess high school wasn't as bad because I had friends from, like, growing up through sports and stuff. So, like, I had people that, you know, that I could talk to. But I get up there, and I'm, you know, a lot of new faces. And I just remember the feeling of, like, walking out of my dorm to go to class, just paralyzed with fear. Because, like, there's all these new faces. I don't know any of, like, how do I, what do I say to these people? Like, what? Like, I'm like too tall, too lanky. Like, how do I stand? Like, where do I put my hands? Like I don't fit into whatever you guys got going on. Like, you guys just all seem to have it figured out. And then I'm sitting here just constantly going and going and going. And like, and when I come to find out, it's like, people don't really care that much about me. Not nearly as much as I think they do. But you couldn't tell me that in the moment. And again, like, I know I've had the answer to what fixes that for, you know, since the day I tried it. And like, and that was my college experience. Like, I could not leave the dorm room unless I was absolutely mangled. And I survived longer than, in retrospect, longer than I should have. But, like, it just got to the point where I couldn't go to class anymore. Like, I'm the guy dropping acid at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning because it's there. I don't know. He had it. So, like, let's, I don't know. Whatever. How, what am I going to say? No. I couldn't make it to class. And the thing with college is, like, typically you have to, like, go to class to stay enrolled at a university. Like, I said I went there. I really just was kind of living there. I didn't really go to college. Just kind of hung out and drank with whoever wanted to drink with me. And that didn't last all that long. And a couple underages later, and then an absolute zero my last semester there, which is pretty impressive. That's like, you gotta really try to get an absolute zero. And they told me to leave and never come back. I said, that's probably a good move. And I'm right back home. Doing the exact same stuff I was doing before I went up there. Wasting my life away on my buddy's mom's couch. Working dead end jobs. Leaving, either getting fired or leaving before they can fire me. Cause there's, at this point, like the family's smartened up. They don't carry cash anymore. Cause they know they can't. Any jewelry that's worth anything's already gone. Pretty much anything that ain't bolted down ended up at the pawn shop. I don't know why they still let me live there at that point, but like I had to seek outside sources, and work was a good one. Got away with that for as long as I could and just like went nowhere fast. Like I said, just wasting time, just wasting my life away and just piling on the shame and the guilt and all the, just the poor me, and just, like I became like totally alone, and that was, and swearing that it's everybody else's fault, like swearing that I just, that my friends are just fake friends, and all this stuff, I could only get away with stealing from the outside sources for so long before, before you get caught, right? Everybody gets caught. And I got arrested and I ended up doing some hard time. I did 24 hours in the county jail. I'm like a hardened criminal. I'm a big, like I said, I'm a tough guy. I'm extremely tough. And I was hugging that intake phone, calling anybody who would pick up and trying to get out. And my mom and dad told me to sit tight, you know, cause get comfortable because you're absolutely not coming home. That's not good. Because that was who my mom and dad were to me. They were mom and daddy that I take off the shelf when I need a bailout. Like that was my relationship with them. They showed me nothing but love for as long as I can remember, and I used and abused them every single solitary chance I got. And yeah, and they had enough. And like to this point, I had never really admitted any kind of problem with any kind of substance. You know, it was I got it under control. Everything's fine. You're overreacting. But I had a feeling that that would get me out. And so I said I needed to go to rehab. I needed to go to treatment. I can't detox in here. You know, giving them the whole story, and they agreed. And I mean, I don't know if it was the right move or not, but like. My intention was not to like get out and get better. It was just to get out, and I was going to say whatever I had to say to get out, and it worked because I know how to just pull on them heartstrings even when it seems like they're not budging this time. Nothing's happening. You know, I'm a manipulative son of a bitch, and I got my way one more time, and they bailed me out, sent me right to a treatment center, and that was my first introduction to any of this stuff. And honestly, it wasn't all bad. Like I didn't go for most of what they talk about in treatment. Like some counselor reading out of the textbook about what my problem is didn't really hit me. But when the H&I speakers would come in, like the real people taking their own time, like coming in and carrying a message, it hit me in a way that the small group counselor couldn't, you know? I would hear these people like describe their life and describe their problems, and it was the first time I'd ever heard anybody put words to like the insanity inside my head that went on for as long as I could remember. To be able to describe like that mental obsession, to describe the phenomenon of craving, describe all these things that were just like. They were a part of my life, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I couldn't understand what was happening. And then it gave me some relief to like, really at that point it was that like, okay, I'm not the only insane person here. Like I'm not the only person that suffers from this thing, that's experienced these things. And I took those speakers and I said, okay, thank you. You know, thanks for coming out. Thank you for telling me what you did, and now I know what to avoid. You know, you saved someone today. And I was in that treatment center for a week. I was home for a week, and I was back in the same treatment center a week later. And like, it wasn't all bad. Like, the first couple days were good. My parents dropped me off at meetings, and like, doing my thing. And then day three, they really saw a change in me. They were like, you can take the car yourself. I think I am ready. I think you're right. I had a couple of checks from work sitting there. I'm just going to drop these off at the bank. That's all. I just, you know, they're going to go bad if I don't, you know, they void it for 90 days. So I got to, you know, thing. And then if I made a left out of the bank, I was going to go to the meeting. If I made a right, I was going to go to 95. And I guess the car just went right. I wanted to go to the meeting. The plan was to go to the meeting. And then the car went right, and there was only, you know, 25 exits from Delco to North Philly. But I can't turn around now. I'm already on 95. Like, what? You know, what? I'm here. Might as well strap in, you know. And like, that's like really the first, like, sign of powerlessness I can see from a standpoint of, like, I was as physically sober as I was going to get at that point. There was no more withdrawal. There's no more none of that. Like, I was guys still sweating through every piece of clothing I owned, but like I was physically okay. There was no, it was not the phenomenon of craving. It was not this, I took one so I gotta get another. It was, I'm as sober as I'm gonna get and I'm going anyway. I'm going to do this thing that's caused me and anybody who's made the mistake of getting close to me nothing but harm. I'm gonna do it again. Against my will. Cause I did want to go to the meeting. And it didn't. Like I said, I ended up back in that treatment center a week later, and that set off a vicious cycle of just rapid fire, in and out of rehabs, in and out of recovery houses, just bang, bang, bang. Couldn't really stay in one place for more than 30 days. And again, like I would get to these houses, and it wasn't all bad all the time. Like I would have good days, and like on the outside, things would start looking better. I'd get a little job. I'd start showering somewhat regularly, which was a change. And like, I'd show up at the meeting, I'd drop a power share about how much of a dick my recovery house manager was. And then I'd leave the second the meeting was over. I'd feel good for about 5 minutes, and then I would sit in the recovery house and daydream for hours about ways I could die without doing it myself. And like how great that would be if I didn't have to wake up tomorrow and do this again. If I could just leave. That's one thing. Like my mom was never enough to keep me sober, but she was enough to keep me from killing myself for whatever reason. She had that much power. And I never made a direct attempt on my life other than the, you know, whatever 10 plus years of putting mystery chemicals in my body. But I wanted more than anything in the world, like I got sober in South Philly and like I'd be walking on the street, and when the seven bus went down the street, I'd walk a little closer to the street because one of two things is going to happen. I either get hit by the bus and I die, and I get like a parade or some shit because I got hit by a bus when I was trying to get sober, you know, something like that. Or I live, and I sue the shit out of SEPTA, and I get a bunch of pain meds. It's a win-win. Like, that was the best plan I had at the time. That's me 2 weeks sober, putting around South Philly, going nowhere fast. And like, I can only take that for so long. That mental, that spiritual pain, just needing something and not having the power to like, to produce it myself. Like I need that relief. I need some sort of escape, and I know it's right there in so many different forms. Like it's right there, and I know it'll take pain away, and it does. And then it sets the cycle over again. I don't know how many times I did that. And like, I used to say a lot, like I used to come in and out of AA. I was never really in. Like I'll give you my recovery house manager share. I'll show up right as the meeting starts. I'll leave right when it ends. I'll get a fake sponsor to, you know, write on a piece of paper and tell my recovery house manager, yeah, this guy's working with this guy. But I'm not calling that guy. I'm not telling you anything about myself. And like, God forbid the girl with 30 days looks at me, then it's like, I'm not even alcoholic anymore. Like, you guys are insane. I'm good. We're going to be fine. You leave us alone. And like, that was AA for me. And then I get loaded and they say AA doesn't work. Right? I ended up in Florida. That's where I met my rehab romance. We locked eyes in the med line. The stars aligned. She had just broke up with her boyfriend, and that's all I really needed to hear. And the day I completed, I always completed because I'm a good boy. And the day I completed, she got kicked out. So like, it's fate. Like, this is God's giving me a sign here, you know. And I'm gonna save her with the 15 bucks in my pocket. And then I proceeded to live off her for the next 3 weeks. Which started out with we're just gonna drink. So like I said, she was into other stuff too. But we were both, you know, 21-year-old adults. This is America. It's our goddamn right to drink. And we did. And we got a hotel, that first night, and we got drunk, and the worst thing that could have ever happened. Absolutely nothing. No consequences, no problems, everything went smooth. So let's do it again. We can do this. Look, we just did it. Let's do it again. We did it again, and nothing happened, no problems. And then day three, I'm in the slums of Miami, standing on corners I shouldn't be standing on, talking to people I shouldn't be talking to. And it wasn't the plan, right? I promise you that was not the plan. And yet there we were. And again, I set off a 3-week run from hell. I was going to kill her, kill myself, kill us both. It was the day after my 22nd birthday. She was supposed to go out, get us both a little something, something. She came back pissed drunk with absolutely nothing for me. Wasn't happy about that. very upset about that, as a matter of fact. And like, the, it's, I think the way Bill describes it in Bill's story, his first step experience, I think is like the best way I've seen it put. It's just that quicksand in all directions, like the reality of my situation hit me like a ton of bricks. And like it was the first time in my life I ever really admitted that like I have no idea what's going on. That was the real experience. It wasn't this moment where I'm like, I just need the 12 steps of AA. I need the loving hand of God, and I need to help his kids. Like, that's what I need to do. It was just like, I don't know how I got here. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know anything. I'm totally and completely screwed. It wasn't that I can't drink anymore. It was that I'm going to drink again. I'm going to do this again and again and again and again. No matter how bad I want to stop, I can't. I'm screwed. And that was the most important place that a person like me could ever get to. Because every single other time it was, I know what I did wrong. I know what I got to do. I know. I had to get to a place where I realized that I don't know shit. If I knew anything about anything, why can't I stay off the top bunk of the... Why is it a good thing that I'm on the top bunk of the recovery house? Like, that's not... Like, you might be in a recovery house, and that's great. I'm not saying don't be in a recovery house. What I'm saying is it's not a marker of success in life. Like, my mom wasn't going into work telling people, like, Sean's at the top bunk now. Like, he's doing great. Here's his rehab completion certificate. You know what I mean? Like, things weren't going well. I didn't have anything to look back on, like, hang around. I'm like, well, at least I did that. Like, I had nothing. And it became very apparent to me that it was 110% my fault. That I couldn't blame anybody else anymore. That I created this mess, and I don't know how to get out of it. And that was huge. It's the first true spiritual experience of my life, where, like, things started to shift. My mind started to shift to this place of, like, maybe I need to learn something. Because I was the smartest guy in the room, every room I walked into for a very long time. I still can be on any given day, and it's a very, very lonely place to be. And yeah, I knew I still had that insurance card in my pocket, so I went away again. And so I go away. I go to this detox in Miami for like 5 days. I talk to the guy in South Philly that had a problem with me getting high in the bathroom for some reason. I didn't think it was a big deal, but he thought otherwise, so he kicked me out. But he was going to let me back in, so I was like, cool. So I get out of the detox, I go to Miami airport, coming back to Philly, things are going to be great, and I got like 45 minutes to kill before the plane. I got some cigarettes, so I'm just going to smoke. Look for a place to smoke, that's it, no big deal. Walk by a bar, and they're smoking in the bar. Cool, just going to smoke. I don't have any money. Could possibly go wrong, I'm just going to go smoke. And there are like a couple stories like eerily similar to this in the book. Like, I crossed the threshold, and all of a sudden, like the woman in her 40s sitting by herself appears in front of me. I'm like, she's going to get me a couple drinks. And like, just like that, like, there was no thought other than that. My mind just flipped to that. And when I get on something like that, like, I'm going to make it happen. And I was like, is anybody sitting here? She goes, no, go ahead. I'm like, cool. Just sitting there talking. She goes, are you going to get something to drink? I was like, you're never going to believe this. All my money was on my card. My card got stolen. Like, I got nothing until I get back to Philly. I got to get a new card. She's like, oh, I'll get you a drink. I was like, no, I couldn't. What kind of man would I be if I asked you to get me a drink? Come on. She's like, no, it's just rum and coke. Thanks. And I'm sitting here sucking down rum and coke with this lady. Like, I'm on my way to this recovery house. I just had this experience where, like, I knew that I was totally screwed. I knew that I needed some kind of help. And like, that's like a fear-based sobriety. It will not last for me. It absolutely will not. That time it took 5 days. It's been longer at other points, but that was 5 days removed from like the most gut-wrenching terrible experience in my life. And just like that, I'm sucking down rum and cokes with this lady I don't even know. On my way to the recovery house. And luckily I did get on the plane. Like, I didn't even get drunk. I had two rum and cokes. Like, it wasn't like I got bombed on the way there. But like, there was an opportunity for me to get two rum and cokes. So I had to do it. And I get on the plane. My mom picks me up at the airport. Dad didn't want to see me, rightfully so. And she takes me to the recovery house. She says, "Is this it?" And I said the first honest words to her, maybe ever. And I said, "I don't know. I didn't tell her that I just drank two rum and cokes before, but like, it's like, I don't know how this is going to go. I got nothing for you. I'm sorry. Like, this is, and I ended up doing a little something extra that night because I figured I'd want to, you know, I can't start my sobriety day today anyway. Might as well enjoy it. And that was a crazy thing about that. So that was September 19th, the day I got to the house. And I woke up the 20th, and so like I said, like the night before, I had gotten away with getting loaded in the recovery house. And I don't know about you, but I'm not the kind of guy that gets away with something and stops doing it. Like, I do it until I get caught, until the wheels fall off, until it's painfully clear that I'm doing what I'm not supposed to be doing. And again, like, I woke up the 20th feeling like a steaming pile of dog shit, and I didn't get loaded. And again, putzed around South Philly for a couple weeks, like half hoping to get hit by a Cepta bus. Didn't get hit by a Cepta bus. And all the while, like, through me coming in and out in that area, there was this group of, like, pathetic people. Really, really pathetic dudes that had nothing better to do than to, like, come into the recovery house and try to help people. With their big books and their smiles and their God. And I thought they were, I felt bad for them on my top bunk with my trash bags. I felt bad for these people because how pathetic must your life be that you have to come hang out with me in the recovery house? Like, what a loser. I can't wait to get out of here and you're willingly coming back here. Yeah, it just didn't make sense to me. And they were still there. I'm revolving door in and out every other month, and they're still there, and they still got their shit-eating grins on their face, and they still got their big books in their hand. They're still talking about God. They're still trying to take me to a meeting. Like, I can only fight those dudes off for so long. And one dude in particular, he used to do the big book study at our recovery house. And I heard him talk, and it seemed like he was in somewhat similar places that I was in. And I could visibly see that he was not in the same place as me anymore. Again, like, he was showering and, like, had an ounce of self-respect. And like, he was just happy. Like, he was visibly happy. You could just see it. And I was just like, whatever. What'd you do? I don't know. Like, help me, I guess. And he had a car. If I'm being honest, he had a car, so I knew I probably wasn't gonna have to walk the meetings anymore. And that was good. So that definitely helped, but it was, you know, what'd you do? And I'm expecting this, like, elaborate, detailed plan to get me sober because I'm very, very special. I'm very unique and I should be treated as such. And he said, "I'm going to take you through the first 164 pages of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous," which is exactly what my sponsor did for me, which is what his sponsor did for him, all the way back to Bill and Bob. That's what we got. And when we're done, you're going to do it for other guys. I said, okay. Against my better knowledge, I said, okay. So we made our start, and I didn't believe most of it. And that's mostly because I was 100% certain that God wasn't real, based on zero evidence and zero research into the subject. Just because I had to be right, God's not real. And he said, I didn't ask you how you felt about God. This is what the plan is. This is what the book tells us to do. So you can do it, or we're wasting our time, and I'll go help somebody else. Like the plan is the plan, the book is the book, and like, you know, through us reading through some of the first step stuff, it became painfully obvious to me that I'm not getting very far on my own. So maybe, like, really, what do I have to lose by listening to this dude? And like, if it doesn't work, corners are still gonna be there, bars are still gonna be there, like I can go do my thing if this doesn't work. But I might as well actually give it a shot. And that's another thing, like a radical idea, somebody put forward to me when I came back this time. It's like, how many times are you going to come to a 12-step fellowship, not do the 12 steps, and then wonder why it didn't work? And like, it's a pretty logical statement, right? The 12 steps of AA should probably be worked if I'm going to do AA. And that was something like I never even considered, really. I heard people talk about it. I thought it was like extra credit or something. Like, it just didn't seem like anything I had to do. I was more like a don't drink, make a meeting type guy. You know, that was more, I could wrap my head around that. It seemed pretty logical. And even that, like, listen, if that's your thing and like you're happy and you're sober, by all means, you know, rock out. But like that idea had been suggested to me before I got here. The idea of like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that anymore. Like, yeah, yeah, that's probably, like, if I had the power to not drink, I would not be here. I promise you that. I would just be not drinking somewhere, having a grand old time. And again, that goes back to the powerlessness for me. Like, I can't not do it. And that's really like the only thing that for somebody like me that'll get me to do this work. It'll get me to write the fourth step and pray to a God I don't even believe in for months. And like, go meet with people and admit my wrongs and pay people their money back and things like that. Like, it all for me comes back to that step one experience that I don't have a choice anymore. Like, I don't have a say in what's going to happen next. And like, I don't know if this is going to work, but I know my way doesn't. So why don't I just give it a shot? And, I did it as honestly and thoroughly as I could. And, again, like, didn't believe it most of the way through, but like, slowly but surely, I saw my life getting better, and not like not so much materialistically, but like I started to be able to sleep at night, which was amazing. I started waking up not absolutely dreading the 24 hours ahead. I started to be able to like tolerate the 9 other guys in the recovery house. Like they were okay, you know. Like I just kind of started to have this feeling like maybe I'm gonna actually be okay. Maybe the sky isn't falling. Maybe, like, it might not be exactly how I want it to be, but I think I might be all right. Like, those prayers didn't seem so empty anymore. It didn't seem like I was just talking to the wall or wasting my breath. And it wasn't a sudden thing for me. It happened over time, but it became very hard to, like, deny what was going on here. And the things that they were talking about in the book. And like, once I kind of got a taste for this, like, I caught fire, and it really took off for me when I started passing it on to other guys. And I was terrified. I was like 3-4 months sober, running around South Philly with a big book, beating people over the head, not knowing what the hell I'm talking about, but I'm doing something drastically different than I'd ever done in my life, and I'm getting a drastically different result. Like, I was free. I was, you know, I was still on the top bunk, still living out of trash bags. I was rolling dough balls for $8 an hour, but I had enough money for rent. I had enough money for smokes. That's all I needed. I did my little chore at the house, and I could spend pretty much the rest of my time doing AA, and I was on fire. It was the freest I've ever been in my life, without a doubt. And it sold me. The proof is in the pudding. Like, if I never did the work, I would have never found out what we really have here. It sounded like a bunch of bullshit when I would hear people talk about it. Like, it was something I had to experience for myself. And I did. And, like, I mean, since then, like, I can tell you, I've made a ton of mistakes in this program, out of this program, whatever. I've gone through phases where I'm Captain AA for an hour a day, you know, I show up, I'm here to help everybody, and then I go home and I'm living a completely different life. And like, when I look myself in the mirror at night, I know who I am. I know what kind of life I'm living. I know if I'm living in integrity, if my actions and my words are lining up. It's funny because like, how good I sleep is pretty much directly tied to that. It's funny how that works. I've gone through periods where like I wanted to die in sobriety. And it's a direct result of like straying from this work, straying from God. It becomes real quickly, look at all this stuff I did. Look at this life I've made for myself. Look at what I did. And I forget where I came from, and I forget about God. And the cool thing is, no matter how many times I forget about God, God never forgets about me. No matter how many times I turn my back on Him, He's there when I come back. And that's been my experience, and thank God that's what I was trained, to do. I wasn't trained to be sponsor reliant, or meeting reliant, or job reliant, or girlfriend reliant, or friend reliant, or family reliant. Like, I was trained to be God reliant. That's what our book talks about. Because there's gonna come a moment when nobody answers the phone. Because humans are fallible people. Humans will fail you. And there's gonna come a moment when like, the only thing between me and making that drastic, life-changing decision that will ruin everything I've put together. The only thing that's gonna stop me is that power greater than me. Whatever that looks like in your life. Thank God that's what I was taught. Thank God that's what was beaten into my head from the start. That this whole deal is about getting connected to a power greater than myself that's gonna solve my problem. And that's been my experience. That God provides, you know. The coolest experiences I think I've had are taking other guys through this work and seeing the lights turn on. That's when I've really, really sunk into me that this isn't bullshit. That like this wasn't just like my sponsor did some magical shit to me and like I got better. Like when I started seeing other guys that I was taking through the book get better, I knew that wasn't because of me, and I knew I didn't produce that. And it's really what keeps me around, and it's been the thing I've probably been most consistent with since I got sober is keeping my hand out. No matter what else I'm getting into, I've managed to keep my hand out to the best of my ability, and I think that's been the thing that saved my ass more often than not. It's the thing that's kept me closest to God. And there's more than one way to skin a cat too. Like, it's not all about just sponsorship for me. Like sometimes it's, whether it's taking a guy to detox or there's other things I've gotten into outside of AA to expand upon my spirituality. There's a lot of different stuff here. There's a lot of different factors that go into what we do here. And like the fellowship aspect's been huge for me. Like there's a group of guys that I got sober with, and this doesn't happen all that often in recovery houses. Like it's a solid group of guys that we all got sober around the same time. And we're all still sober. Like we pretty much all moved back out to Delco. That's like the Delco dream. You get sober in South Philly and move right back out to Delco. And they got a home group Wednesday nights and it's great to see and like grow with these guys. Like they got families now, like families of their own. It's truly amazing. Like a group of people that like couldn't be trusted with a $5 bill just a few years ago. And we're like thriving members of society. Like the people in the family that people can count on, you know. Where else does that happen? My whole favorite thing about this entire deal, it's a part of like in the promises, where no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience experience can help benefit others. What that means to me is that, like, everything I did, all the people I hurt, all the lies I told, all the money I stole, it wasn't for nothing. Like, that becomes my biggest asset here. That becomes the thing that allows me to connect to the guy walking through the door thinking he's the biggest scumbag on the face of the earth. Nobody's done half the shit he's done. Nobody can relate to what he's been through and the things he's done. And I can sit there, I get to be the smiling jerk off now. The guy I wanted to punch in the face, the guy I thought was so, like, beyond pathetic. Like, I get to be that guy. And there's, like, a group of guys at that same recovery house I got sober at that probably want to punch me in the face because they hear my voice every Thursday night breaking down that big book just like my sponsor did for me. And I love it. Like, it's a great feeling being on the other side of that table. But again, like, if one guy stays sober, then I did my job, right? And even then, if nobody stays sober, and I did, like when Bill first started doing this, like, Bill was running around, and probably against his better judgment, he's ripping dudes off bar stools, like, trying to cram goddamn people's throats, and, like, not a lot of guys were staying sober, but, and, like, his wife pointed out, like, but you did, right? You made an effort to carry this message, and you're staying sober. And like, it's not up to me who stays and who doesn't. Like, what I can control is, like I said, like, keeping my hand out, and using my experience to sell somebody on this program, because that's what my sponsor did for me. He didn't convince me that I was an alcoholic. He didn't sit me down and say, you're this, 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 and this. People have been telling me I was a lot of things my whole life. And I could tell them, fuck yourself. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear it. But what he did was he sat me down and he told me about his alcoholism. He told me about what it looked like in his life, what the obsession looked like for him, what the phenomenon of craving looked like for him, what the spiritual malady looked like for him. And I nodded my head enough when he was talking about his experience that, like, maybe I'm fucked too, you know? And that's my job, is to, like, use my experience to convince somebody that, like, they're not alone, that you're not the only person that's been where you've been, and millions of people just like you have gotten relief and gotten free, totally in spite of themselves, by following the directions in this book. And that's as simple as I can keep it for myself, is to, like, that book is like a cookbook. You do this, 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 and this in this order, and you'll get the long list of promises that are in that book, and there's a ton of promises, and it's not about the Lamborghinis or the yachts or the Ferraris or any of that shit. It's something that you literally can't put a price tag on. And the top of the list is freedom from the thing in between my ears that has been my number one enemy for as long as I can remember. And that's what I get. Sobriety's a byproduct of that. Like, sober for the sake of sober is not my goal. Sober was the problem for as long as I can remember. Sober was not good. Sober was bad. That's why I drank, because I couldn't stand being sober. But sober and free is a totally different ballgame. And freedom's what I got from getting loaded. That was the freedom. And I get that sober as a bird without burning my life to the ground, as a result of, like, following this work, staying close to God, and helping his kids. Especially when I don't want to. Because more often than not, I wake up a selfish son of a bitch just like I did day one. Right? And that's why this program's here. That's why my feet have been trained to do certain things. To be rid of that selfishness early and often throughout my day, so that I can be of maximum service to the world around. That's the goal. I fall short almost every day. But if I keep striving for more, and I keep striving to do better, and I keep taking that inventory and realizing there's more work to be done, I got a shot at being a little bit better tomorrow. And, like, the main thing, like, I don't know, my mom hasn't cried herself to sleep in a very long time. And if that's the only thing I ever got from this program, it would be more than enough. Because Lord knows I robbed that woman of so many nights of sleep. She never cared about the money. Right? And then none of them did. They cared about me, and And that was the thing I couldn't see, and I couldn't fully see what I was doing to the people that loved me the most until I got sober and saw it from another perspective. And that woman gets to be free too. Or at least that she's not suffering as a result of me anymore. And that's a beautiful thing. If you haven't done the 12 steps, you're not currently doing the 12 steps, I highly suggest you do, because there could be a world that you're totally missing out on that's for free and for fun. It just takes a little bit of time and a hell of a lot of ego deflation. But it's absolutely worth it. I can tell you it was worth it for me. And I haven't really found a reason to leave here yet, so I don't plan on doing so anytime soon. That's all I got. Thanks.
Yeah.